Unfortunately, they didn't eat him. In fact, they didn't seem to bother him at all. He fed them chunks of mystery meat from a great wicker basket, which only reinforced the feelings I'd been having since Cersei turned me into a guinea pig, that maybe it was time I joined Grover and became a vegetarian. Trickery, Annabeth decided. We can't beat him by force, so we'll have to use trickery. Okay, I said. What trick? I haven't figured that part out yet. Great. Polyphemus will have to move the rock to let the sheep inside. At sunset, I said, which is when he'll marry Clarice and have Grover for dinner. I'm not sure which is grosser. I could get inside, she said, invisibly. What about me? The sheep, Annabeth mused. She gave me one of those sly looks that always made me wary. How much do you like sheep? Just don't let go, Annabeth said, standing invisibly somewhere off to my right. That was easy for her to say. She wasn't hanging upside down from the belly of a sheep. Now, I'll admit it wasn't as hard as I'd thought. I'd crawled under a car before to change my mom's oil, and this wasn't too different. The sheep didn't care. Even the Cyclops' smallest sheep were big enough to support my weight, and they had thick wool. I just twirled the stuff into handles for my hands, hooked my feet against the sheep's thigh bones, and presto, I felt like a baby wallaby, riding around against the sheep's chest, trying to keep the wool out of my mouth and my nose. In case you're wondering, the underside of a sheep doesn't smell that great. Imagine a winter sweater that's been dragged through the mud and left in the laundry hamper for a week. Something like that. The sun was going down. No sooner was I in position than the Cyclops roared,
"Oi! Goaties! Sheepies!"
The flock dutifully began trudging back up the slopes toward the cave. "This is it," Annabeth whispered. "I'll be close by. Don't worry." I made a silent promise to the gods that if we survived this, I'd tell Annabeth she was a genius. The frightening thing was, I knew the gods would hold me to it. My sheep taxi started plodding up the hill. After 100 yards, my hands and feet started to hurt from holding on. I gripped the sheep's wool more tightly, and the animal made a grumbling sound. I didn't blame it. I wouldn't want anybody rock climbing in my hair either. But if I didn't hold on, I was sure I'd fall off right there in front of the monster.
"Hassan Pfeffer,"
the Cyclops said, patting one of the sheep in front of me.
"Einstein, Widget, there, Widget."
Polyphemus patted my sheep and nearly knocked me to the ground.
"Putting on some extra mutton there?"
Uh-oh. I thought, here it comes. But Polyphemus just laughed and swatted the sheep's rear end, propelling us forward.
"Go on, fatty. Soon Polyphemus will eat you for breakfast."
And just like that, I was in the cave. I could see the last of the sheep coming inside. If Annabeth didn't pull off her distraction soon... The Cyclops was about to roll the stone back into place when from somewhere outside Annabeth shouted, "Hello, ugly!" Polyphemus stiffened.
"Who said that?"
"Nobody,"
Annabeth yelled. That got exactly the reaction she'd been hoping for. The monster's face turned red with rage.
"Nobody,"
Polyphemus yelled back.
"I remember you."
"You're too stupid to remember anybody," Annabeth taunted, "much less nobody."
I hoped to the god she was already moving when she said that, because Polyphemus bellowed furiously, grabbed the nearest boulder, which happened to be his front door, and threw it toward the sound of Annabeth's voice. I heard the rock smash into 1,000 fragments. For a terrible moment, there was silence. Then Annabeth shouted,
"You haven't learned to throw any better, either."
Polyphemus howled,
"Come here. Let me kill you, nobody.
You can't kill nobody, you stupid oaf, she taunted. Come find me.
Polyphemus barreled down the hill toward her voice. Now, the nobody thing wouldn't have made sense to anybody, but Annabeth had explained to me that it was the name Odysseus had used to trick Polyphemus centuries ago, right before he poked the Cyclops' eye out with a large, hot stick. Annabeth had figured Polyphemus would still have a grudge about that name, and she was right. In his frenzy to find his old enemy, he forgot about resealing the cave entrance. Apparently, he didn't even stop to consider that Annabeth's voice was female, whereas the first nobody had been male. On the other hand, he'd wanted to marry Grover, so he couldn't have been all that bright about the whole male-female thing. I just hoped Annabeth could stay alive and keep distracting him long enough for me to find Grover and Clarice. I dropped off my ride, patted Widget on the head, and apologized. I searched the main room, but there was no sign of Grover or Clarice. I pushed through the crowd of sheep and goats toward the back of the cave. Even though I dreamed about this place, I had a hard time finding my way through the maze. I ran down corridors littered with bones, past rooms full of sheepskin rugs and life-size cement sheep that I recognized as the work of Medusa. There were collections of sheep t-shirts, large tubs of lanolin cream, and woolly coats, socks, and hats with ram's horns. Finally, I found the spinning room, where Grover was huddled in the corner, trying to cut Clarice's bonds with a pair of safety scissors.
"It's no good," Clarice said. "This rope is like iron." "Just a few more minutes." "Grover," she cried exasperated, "you've been working at it for hours."
And then they saw me.
"Percy," Clarice said, "you're supposed to be blown up."
"Good to see you too. Now hold still while I..."
"Percy," Grover bleated and tackled me with a goat hug. "You heard me. You came."
"Yeah, buddy," I said. "Of course I came."
"Where's Annabeth?"
"Outside," I said. "But there's no time to talk. Clarice, hold still." I uncapped Riptide and sliced off her ropes. She stood stiffly, rubbing her wrists. She glared at me for a moment, then looked at the ground and mumbled, "Thanks."
"You're welcome," I said. "Now, was anyone else on board your lifeboat?"
Clarice looked surprised.
"No, just me. Everybody else aboard the Birmingham. Well, I didn't even know you guys made it out."
I looked down, trying not to believe that my last hope of seeing Tyson alive had just been crushed.
"Okay, come on then. We have to help..."
An explosion echoed through the cave, followed by a scream that told me we might be too late. It was Annabeth crying out in fear.
Chapter 15. Nobody gets the fleece.
"I got nobody," Polyphemus gloated.
We crept to the cave entrance and saw the Cyclops grinning wickedly, holding up empty air. The monster shook his fist, and a baseball cap fluttered to the ground. There was Annabeth, hanging upside down by her legs.
"Ha!" the Cyclops said. "Nasty invisible girl. Already got feisty one for wife. Means you gotta be grilled with mango chutney."
Annabeth struggled, but she looked dazed. She had a nasty cut on her forehead. Her eyes were glassy.
"I'll rush him," I whispered to Clarice. "Our ship is around the back of the island. You and Grover."
"No way," they said at the same time. Clarice had armed herself with a highly collectible ram's horn spear from the Cyclops' cave. Grover had found a sheep's thigh bone, which he didn't look too happy about, but he was gripping it like a club, ready to attack.
"We'll take him together," Clarice growled.
"Yeah,"
Grover said. Then he blinked,
like he couldn't believe he just agreed with Clarice about something. All right, I said. Attack plan Macedonia. They nodded. We'd all taken the same training courses at Camp Half-Blood. They knew what I was talking about. They would sneak around either side and attack the Cyclops from the flanks while I held his attention in the front. Probably what this meant was that we'd all die instead of just me, but I was grateful for the help. I hefted my sword and shouted, "Hey, ugly!" The giant whirled toward me.
"Another one? Who are you?"
"Put down my friend. I'm the one who insulted you."
"You are nobody?"
"That's right, you smelly bucket of nose drool." It didn't sound quite as good as Annabeth's insults, but it was all I could think of. "I'm nobody, and I'm proud of it. Now put her down and get over here. I want to stab your eye out again."
"Roar!"
he bellowed. The good news, he dropped Annabeth. The bad news, he dropped her head first onto the rocks, where she lay motionless as a rag doll. The other bad news, Polyphemus barreled toward me, 1,000 smelly pounds of Cyclops that I would have to fight with a very small sword. "Fur Pan!" Grover rushed in from the right. He threw his sheep bone, which bounced harmlessly off the monster's forehead. Clarice ran in from the left and set her spear against the ground just in time for the Cyclops to step on it. He wailed in pain, and Clarice dove out of the way to avoid getting trampled. But the Cyclops just plucked out the shaft like a large splinter and kept advancing on me. I moved in with Riptide. The monster made a grab for me. I rolled aside and stabbed him in the thigh. I was hoping to see him disintegrate, but this monster was much too big and powerful. "Get Annabeth!" I yelled at Grover. He rushed over, grabbed her invisibility cap, and picked her up while Clarice and I tried to keep Polyphemus distracted. I have to admit, Clarice was brave. She charged the Cyclops again and again. He pounded the ground, stomped at her, grabbed at her, but she was too quick. And as soon as she made an attack, I followed up by stabbing the monster in the toe, or the ankle, or the hand. But we couldn't keep this up forever. Eventually, we would tire or the monster would get in a lucky shot. It would only take one hit to kill us. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Grover carrying Annabeth across the rope bridge. It wouldn't have been my first choice, given the man-eating sheep on the other side, but at the moment, that looked better than this side of the chasm, and it gave me an idea. "Fall back!" I told Clarice. She rolled away as a Cyclops' fist smashed the olive tree beside her. We ran for the bridge, Polyphemus right behind us. He was cut up and hobbling from so many wounds, but all we'd done was slow him down and make him mad.
"Grind you into sheep chow," he promised. 1,000 curses on nobody."
"Faster," I told Clarice. We tore down the hill. The bridge was our only chance. Grover had just made it to the other side and was setting Annabeth down. We had to make it across too before the giant caught us. "Grover," I yelled, "get Annabeth's knife." His eyes widened when he saw the Cyclops behind us, but he nodded like he understood. As Clarice and I scrambled across the bridge, Grover began sawing at the ropes. The first strand went snap. Polyphemus bounded after us, making the bridge sway wildly. The ropes were now half cut. Clarice and I dove for solid ground, landing beside Grover. I made a wild slash with my sword and cut the remaining ropes. The bridge fell away into the chasm, and the Cyclops howled. With delight, because he was standing right next to us.
"Failed!" he yelled gleefully. "Nobody failed!"
Clarice and Grover tried to charge him, but the monster swatted them aside like flies. My anger swelled. I couldn't believe I'd come this far, lost Tyson, suffered through so much, only to fail, stopped by a big stupid monster in a baby blue tuxedo kilt. Nobody was going to swat down my friends like that. I mean, nobody. Not nobody. You know what I mean. Strength coursed through my body. I raised my sword and attacked, forgetting that I was hopelessly outmatched. I jabbed the Cyclops in the belly. When he doubled over, I smacked him in the nose with the hilt of my sword. I slashed and kicked and bashed until the next thing I knew, Polyphemus was sprawled on his back, dazed and groaning, and I was standing above him, the tip of my sword hovering over his eye. Polyphemus moaned. Percy, Grover gasped. How did you...
Please, no.
The Cyclops moaned, pitifully staring up at me. His nose was bleeding. A tear welled in the corner of his half-blind eye.
My sheepies need me. Only trying to protect my sheep.
He began to sob. I had won. All I had to do was stab. One quick strike. Kill him! Clarice yelled. What are you waiting for? The Cyclops sounded so heartbroken, just like Tyson. He's a Cyclops, Grover warned. Don't trust him. I knew he was right. I knew Annabeth would have said the same thing. But Polyphemus sobbed. And for the first time, it sank in that he was a son of Poseidon, too. Like Tyson. Like me. How could I just kill him in cold blood? We only want the fleece, I told the monster. Will you agree to let us take it?
No! Clarice shouted. Kill him!
The monster sniffed.
My beautiful fleece! Prize of my collection. Take it, cruel human. Take it and go in peace.
I'm going to step back slowly, I told the monster. One false move. Polyphemus nodded like he understood. I stepped back, and as fast as a cobra, Polyphemus smacked me to the edge of the cliff.
Foolish mortal,
he bellowed, rising to his feet.
Take my fleece? Ha! I eat you first!
He opened his enormous mouth, and I knew that his rotten molars were the last things I would ever see. Then something went whoosh over my head, and thump! A rock the size of a basketball sailed into Polyphemus's throat. A beautiful three-pointer. Nothing but net. The Cyclops choked, trying to swallow the unexpected pill. He staggered backward, but there was no place to stagger. His heels slipped, the edge of the cliff crumbled, and the great Polyphemus made chicken wing motions that did nothing to help him fly as he tumbled into the chasm. I turned. Halfway down the path to the beach, standing completely unharmed in the midst of a flock of killer sheep, was an old friend.
Bad Polyphemus, Tyson said. Not all Cyclopes as nice as we look.
Tyson gave us the short version. Rainbow the Hippocampus, who had apparently been following us ever since the Long Island Sound, waiting for Tyson to play with him, had found Tyson sinking beneath the wreckage of the CSS Birmingham and pulled him to safety. He and Tyson had been searching the Sea of Monsters ever since, trying to find us, until Tyson caught the scent of sheep and found this island. I wanted to hug the big oaf, except he was standing in the middle of killer sheep. Tyson, thank the gods! Annabeth is hurt!
You thank the gods she is hurt?
He asked, puzzled. No! I knelt beside Annabeth and was worried sick by what I saw. The gash on her forehead was worse than I'd realized. Her hairline was sticky with blood, Her skin was pale and clammy. Grover and I exchanged nervous looks. Then an idea came to me. Tyson, the fleece. Can you get it for me?
Which one?
Tyson said, looking around at the hundreds of sheep. In the tree, I said. The gold one.
Oh, pretty, yes.
Tyson lumbered over, careful not to step on the sheep. If any of us had tried to approach the fleece, we would have been eaten alive. But I guess Tyson smelled like Polyphemus, because the flock didn't bother him at all. They just cuddled up to him and bleated affectionately, as though they expected to get sheep treats from the big wicker basket. Tyson reached up and lifted the fleece off its branch. Immediately, the leaves on the oak tree turned yellow. Tyson started wading back toward me, but I yelled, "No time! Throw it!" The gold ramskin sailed through the air like a glittering shag frisbee. I caught it with a grunt. It was heavier than I'd expected. 60 or 70 pounds of precious gold wool. I spread it over Annabeth, covering everything but her face, and prayed silently to all the gods I could think of, even the ones I didn't like. Please, please. The color returned to her face. Her eyelids fluttered open. The cut on her forehead began to close. She saw Grover and said weakly, "You're not married?" Grover grinned. "No, my friends talked me out of it." "Annabeth," I said, "just lay still." But despite our protests, she sat up, and I noticed that the cut on her face was almost completely healed. She looked a lot better. In fact, she shimmered with health, as if someone had injected her with glitter. Meanwhile, Tyson was starting to have trouble with the sheep.
"Down,"
he told them as they tried to climb him, looking for food. A few were sniffing in our direction.
"No, sheepies. This way. Come here."
They heeded him, but it was obvious they were hungry, and they were starting to realize Tyson didn't have any treats for them. They wouldn't hold out forever with so much fresh meat nearby. "We have to go," I said. "Our ship is..." The Queen Anne's Revenge was a very long way away. The shortest route was across the chasm, and we'd just destroy the only bridge. The only other possibility was through the sheep. "Tyson," I called, "can you lead the flock as far away as possible?"
"The sheep want food."
"I know. They want people food. Just lead them away from the path. Give us time to get to the beach, then join us there." Tyson looked doubtful, but he whistled.
"Come, sheepies. People food this way."
He jogged off into the meadow, the sheep in pursuit. "Keep the fleece around you," I told Annabeth, "just in case you're not fully healed yet. Can you stand?" She tried, but her face turned pale again.
"Oh, not fully healed."
Clarice dropped next to her and felt her chest, which made Annabeth gasp. "Ribs broken," Clarice said. "They're mending, but definitely broken."
"How can you tell?" I asked.
Clarice glared at me. "Because I've broken a few, runt. I'll have to carry her." Before I could argue, Clarice picked up Annabeth like a sack of flour and lugged her down to the beach. Grover and I followed. As soon as we got to the edge of the water, I concentrated on the Queen Anne's Revenge. I willed it to raise anchor and come to me. After a few anxious minutes, I saw the ship rounding the tip of the island.
"Incoming!"
Tyson yelled. He was bounding down the path to join us, the sheep about 50 yards behind, bleeding in frustration as their cyclops friend ran away without feeding them. "They probably won't follow us into the water," I told the others. "All we have to do is swim for the ship."
"With Annabeth like this?" Clarice protested.
"We can do it," I insisted. I was starting to feel confident again. I was back in my home turf, the sea. Once we get to the ship, we're home free. We almost made it, too. We were just wading past the entrance to the ravine when we heard a tremendous roar and saw Polyphemus scraped up and bruised, but still very much alive, his baby blue wedding outfit in tatters, splashing toward us with a boulder in each hand. Chapter 16. I go down with the ship.
"You'd think you'd run out of rocks," I muttered.
"Swim for it," Grover said.
He and Clarice plunged into the surf. Annabeth hung onto Clarice's neck and tried to paddle with one hand, the wet fleece weighing her down. But the monster's attention wasn't on the fleece.
"You young cyclops," Polyphemus roared. "Traitor to your kind."
Tyson froze.
"Don't listen to him," I pleaded. "Come on."
I pulled Tyson's arm, but I might as well have been pulling a mountain. He turned and faced the older cyclops.
"I am not a traitor. You serve mortals," Polyphemus shouted. "Thieving humans."
Polyphemus threw his first boulder. Tyson swatted it aside with his fist.
"Not a traitor," Tyson said. "And you are not my kind. Death or victory!"
Polyphemus charged into the surf, but his foot was still wounded. He immediately stumbled and fell on his face. That would have been funny, except he started to get up again, spitting salt water and growling.
"Percy!" Clarice yelled. "Come on!"
They were almost to the ship with the fleece. If I could just keep the monster distracted a little longer...
"Go," Tyson told me. "I will hold Big Ugly."
"No, he'll kill you."
I had already lost Tyson once. I wasn't going to lose him again.
"We'll fight him together."
"Together,"
Tyson agreed. I drew my sword. Polyphemus advanced carefully, limping worse than ever. But there was nothing wrong with his throwing arm. He chucked his second boulder. I dove to one side, but I still would have been squashed if Tyson's fist hadn't blasted the rock to rubble. I willed the sea to rise. A 20-foot wave surged up, lifting me on its crest. I rode toward the cyclops and kicked him in the eye, leaping over his head as the water blasted him onto the beach.
"Destroy you!" Polyphemus spluttered. "Fleece stealer!"
"You stole the fleece," I yelled. "You've been using it to lure satyrs to their deaths."
"So? Satyr's good eating."
"The fleece should be used to heal. It belongs to the children of the gods."
"I am a child of the gods."
Polyphemus swiped at me, but I sidestepped.
"Father Poseidon, curse this thief."
He was blinking hard now, like he could barely see, and I realized he was targeting by the sound of my voice.
"Poseidon won't curse me," I said, backing up as the cyclops grabbed air. "I'm his son, too. He won't play favorites."
Polyphemus roared. He ripped an olive tree out of the side of the cliff and smashed it where I'd been standing a moment before.
"Humans not the same. Nasty, tricky, lying."
Grover was helping Annabeth aboard the ship. Clarice was waving frantically at me, telling me to come on. Tyson worked his way around Polyphemus, trying to get behind him.
"Young one," the older cyclops called. "Where are you? Help me."
Tyson stopped.
"You weren't raised right,"
Polyphemus wailed, shaking his olive tree club.
"Poor orphan brother, help me."
No one moved. No sound but the ocean and my own heartbeat. Then Tyson stepped forward, raising his hands defensively.
"Don't fight, Cyclops brother. Put down the..."
Polyphemus spun toward his voice. "Tyson!" I shouted. The tree struck him with such force it would have flattened me into a Percy pizza with extra olives. Tyson flew backward, plowing a trench in the sand. Polyphemus charged after him, but I shouted, "No!" and lunged as far as I could with Riptide. I'd hoped to sting Polyphemus in the back of the thigh, but I managed to leap a little bit higher. Polyphemus bleated just like a sheep and swung at me with his tree. I dove, but still got raked across the back by a dozen jagged branches. I was bleeding and bruised and exhausted. The guinea pig inside me wanted to bolt, but I swallowed down my fear. Polyphemus swung the tree again, but this time I was ready. I grabbed a branch as it passed, ignoring the pain in my hands as I was jerked skyward, and let the Cyclops lift me into the air. At the top of the arc, I let go and fell straight against the giant's face, landing with both feet on his already damaged eye. Polyphemus yowled in pain. Tyson tackled him, pulling him down. I landed next to them, sword in hand, within striking distance of the monster's heart. But I locked eyes with Tyson, and I knew I couldn't do it. It just wasn't right. "Let him go," I told Tyson. "Run!" With one last mighty effort, Tyson pushed the cursing older Cyclops away, and we ran for the surf.
"I will smash you!"
Polyphemus yelled, doubling over in pain, his enormous hands cupped over his eye. Tyson and I plunged into the waves.
"Where are you?"
Polyphemus screamed. He picked up his tree club and threw it into the water. It splashed off to our right. I summoned up a current to carry us, and we started gaining speed. I was beginning to think we might make it to the ship when Clarice shouted from the deck,
"Yeah, Jackson! In your face, Cyclops!"
"Shut up!" I wanted to yell. Polyphemus picked up a boulder. He threw it toward the sound of Clarice's voice, but it fell short, narrowly missing Tyson and me.
"Yeah, yeah!"
Clarice taunted.
"You throw like a wimp! Teach you to try marrying me, you idiot!"
"Clarice!" I yelled, unable to stand it. "Shut up!" Too late. Polyphemus threw another boulder, and this time I watched helplessly as it sailed over my head and crashed through the hull of the Queen Anne's Revenge. You wouldn't believe how fast a ship can sink. The Queen Anne's Revenge creaked and groaned and listed forward like it was going down a playground slide. I cursed, willing the sea to push us faster, but the ship's masts were already going under. "Dive!" I told Tyson, and as another rock sailed over our heads, we plunged underwater. My friends were sinking fast, trying to swim, without luck, in the bubbly trail of the ship's wreckage. Not many people realize that when a ship goes down, it acts like a sinkhole, pulling down everything around it. Clarice was a strong swimmer, but even she wasn't making any progress. Grover frantically kicked with his hooves. Annabeth was hanging on to the fleece, which flashed in the water like a wave of new pennies. I swam toward them, knowing that I might not have the strength to pull my friends out. Worse, pieces of timber were swirling around them. None of my power with water would help if I got whacked on the head by a beam. "We need help," I thought.
"Yes,"
Tyson's voice, loud and clear in my head. I looked over at him, startled. I'd heard nereids and other water spirits speak to me underwater before, but it never occurred to me. Tyson was a son of Poseidon. We could communicate with each other.
"Rainbow,"
Tyson said. I nodded, then closed my eyes and concentrated, adding my voice to Tyson's. "Rainbow, we need you." Immediately, shapes shimmered in the darkness below. three horses with fish tails galloping upward faster than dolphins. Rainbow and his friends glanced in our direction and seemed to read our thoughts. They whisked into the wreckage and a moment later burst upward in a cloud of bubbles. Grover, Annabeth, and Clarice each clinging to the neck of a hippocampus. Rainbow, the largest, had Clarice. He raced over to us and allowed Tyson to grab hold of his mane. His friend who bore Annabeth did the same for me. We broke the surface of the water and raced away from Polyphemus's island. Behind us, I could hear the Cyclops roaring in triumph.
I did it! I finally sank nobody!
I hoped he'd never found out he was wrong. We skimmed across the sea as the island shrank to a dot and then disappeared.
Did it, Annabeth muttered in exhaustion.
She slumped against the neck of the hippocampus and instantly fell asleep. I didn't know how far the hippocampi could take us. I didn't know where we were going. I just propped up Annabeth so she wouldn't fall off, covered her in the golden fleece that we'd been through so much to get, and said a silent prayer of thanks. Which reminded me, I still owed the gods a debt.
You're a genius, I told Annabeth quietly.
Then I put my head against the fleece, and before I knew it, I was asleep too. Chapter 17. We get a surprise on Miami Beach.
Percy, wake up!
Salt water splashed my face. Annabeth was shaking my shoulder. In the distance, the sun was setting behind a city skyline. I could see a beachside highway lined with palm trees, storefronts glowing with red and blue neon, a harbor filled with sailboats and cruise ships.
Miami, I think, Annabeth said. But the hippocampi are acting funny.
Sure enough, our fishy friends had slowed down and were whinnying and swimming in circles, sniffing the water. They didn't look happy. One of them sneezed. I could tell what they were thinking. This is as far as they'll take us, I said. Too many humans, too much pollution. We'll have to swim to shore on our own. None of us was very psyched about that, but we thanked Rainbow and his friends for the ride. Tyson cried a little. He unfastened the makeshift saddle pack he'd made, which contained his toolkit and a couple of other things he'd salvaged from the Birmingham wreck. He hugged Rainbow around the neck, gave him a soggy mango he'd picked up on the island, and said goodbye. Once the hippocampi's white manes disappeared into the sea, we swam for shore. The waves pushed us forward, and in no time, we were back in the mortal world. We wandered along the cruise line docks, pushing through crowds of people arriving for vacations. Porters bustled around with carts of luggage. Taxi drivers yelled at each other in Spanish and tried to cut in line for customers. If anybody noticed us, five kids dripping wet and looking like they just had a fight with a monster, they didn't let on. Now that we were back among mortals, Tyson's single eye had blurred from the mist. Grover had put on his cap and sneakers. Even the fleece had transformed from a sheepskin to a red and gold high school letter jacket with a large, glittery Omega on the pocket. Annabeth ran to the nearest newspaper box and checked the date on the Miami Herald. She cursed.
June 18th? We've been away from camp 10 days. That's impossible, Clarice said.
But I knew it wasn't. Time traveled differently in monstrous places.
Thalia's tree must be almost dead, Grover wailed. We have to get the fleece back tonight.
Clarice slumped down on the pavement.
How are we supposed to do that?
Her voice trembled.
We're hundreds of miles away. No money, no ride. This is just like the Oracle said. It's your fault, Jackson. If you hadn't interfered...
Percy's fault? Annabeth exploded. Clarice, how can you say that? You were the biggest...
Stop it, I said.
Clarice put her head in her hands. Annabeth stomped her foot in frustration. The thing was, I'd almost forgotten this quest was supposed to be Clarice's. For a scary moment, I saw things from her point of view. How would I feel if a bunch of other heroes had butted in and made me look bad? I thought about what I'd overheard in the boiler room of the CSS Birmingham. Ares yelling at Clarice, warning her that she'd better not fail. Ares couldn't care less about the camp, but if Clarice made him look bad? "Clarice?" I said. "What did the Oracle tell you exactly?" She looked up. I thought she was going to tell me off, but instead, she took a deep breath and recited her prophecy.
"You shall sail the iron ship with warriors of bone. You shall find what you seek and make it your own, but despair for your life entombed within stone, and fail without friends to fly home alone." "Ouch," Grover mumbled.
"No," I said, "no. Wait a minute. I've got it." I searched my pockets for money and found nothing but a golden drachma. "Does anybody have any cash?" Annabeth and Grover shook their heads morosely. Clarice pulled a wet Confederate dollar from her pocket and sighed.
"Cash?"
Tyson asked hesitantly.
"Like green paper?"
I looked at him. "Yeah."
"Like the kind in duffel bags?"
"Yeah, but we lost those bags days ago." I stuttered to a halt as Tyson rummaged in his saddlepack and pulled out the Ziploc bag full of cash that Hermes had included in our supplies.
"Tyson," I said, "how did you..."
"Thought it was a feed bag for Rainbow," he said. "Found it floating in sea, but only paper inside, sorry."
He handed me the cash, fives and tens, at least $300. I ran to the curb and grabbed a taxi that was just letting out a family of cruise passengers.
"Clarice," I yelled, "come on, you're going to the airport. Annabeth, give her the fleece."
I'm not sure which of them looked more stunned as I took the fleece-letter jacket from Annabeth, tucked the cash into its pocket, and put it in Clarice's arms. Clarice said,
"You'd let me..."
"It's your quest," I said. "We only have enough money for one flight. Besides, I can't travel by air. Zeus would blast me into a million pieces."
"That's what the prophecy meant. You'd fail without friends. Meaning, you'd need our help, but you'd have to fly home alone. You have to get the fleece back safely."
I could see her mind working. Suspicious at first, wondering what trick I was playing, then finally deciding I meant what I said.
She jumped in the cab. "You can count on me. I won't fail."
"Not failing would be good." The cab peeled out in a cloud of exhaust. The fleece was on its way.
"Percy," Annabeth said, "that was so generous," Grover offered.
"Insane,"
Annabeth corrected. "You're betting the lives of everybody at camp that Clarice will get the fleece safely back by tonight?"
"It's her quest," I said. "She deserves a chance."
"Percy is nice,"
Tyson said. "Percy is too nice," Annabeth grumbled, but I couldn't help thinking that maybe, just maybe, she was a little impressed. I'd surprised her, anyway, and that wasn't easy to do.
"Come on," I told my friends. "Let's find another way home."
That's when I turned and found a sword's point at my throat.
"Hey, cuz," said Luke. "Welcome back to the States."
His bear man thugs appeared on either side of us. One grabbed Annabeth and Grover by their t-shirt collars. The other tried to grab Tyson, but Tyson knocked him into a pile of luggage and roared at Luke.
"Percy," Luke said calmly, "tell your giant to back down, or I'll have Arrayus bash your friends' heads together."
Arrayus grinned and raised Annabeth and Grover off the ground, kicking and screaming.
"What do you want, Luke?" I growled.
He smiled, the scar rippling on the side of his face. He gestured toward the end of the dock, and I noticed what should have been obvious. The biggest boat in port was the Princess Andromeda.
Why, Percy? Luke said. I want to extend my hospitality, of course.
The bear twins herded us aboard the Princess Andromeda. They threw us down on the aft deck in front of a swimming pool with sparkling fountains that sprayed into the air. A dozen of Luke's assorted goons, snake people, Laestrigonians, demigods in battle armor, had gathered to watch us get some hospitality.
And so the fleece, Luke mused. Where is it?
He looked us over, prodding my shirt with the tip of his sword, poking Grover's jeans.
Hey! Grover yelled. That's real goat fur under there.
Sorry, old friend, Luke smiled. Just give me the fleece, and I'll leave you to return to your, little nature quest.
Blah!
Grover protested.
Some old friend.
Maybe you didn't hear me.
Luke's voice was dangerously calm.
Where is the fleece?
Not here, I said. I probably shouldn't have told him anything, but it felt good to throw the truth in his face. We sent it on ahead of us. You messed up. Luke's eyes narrowed.
You're lying. You couldn't have...
His face reddened as a horrible possibility occurred to him.
Clarice?
I nodded.
You trusted? You gave?
Yeah.
Augreas?
The bear giant flinched.
Yes? Get below and prepare my steed. Bring it to the deck. I need to fly to the Miami airport fast. But boss... Do it,
Luke screamed,
or I'll feed you to the dragon.
The bear man gulped and lumbered down the stairs. Luke paced in front of the swimming pool, cursing in ancient Greek, gripping his sword so tight his knuckles turned white. The rest of Luke's crew looked uneasy. Maybe they'd never seen their boss so unhinged before. I started thinking, if I could use Luke's anger... Get him to talk so everybody could hear how crazy his plans were? I looked at the swimming pool, at the fountain spraying mist into the air, making a rainbow in the sunset, and suddenly I had an idea. You've been toying with us all along, I said. You wanted us to bring you the fleece and save you the trouble of getting it. Luke scowled.
Of course, you idiot, and you've messed everything up.
Traitor! I dug my last gold drachma out of my pocket and threw it at Luke. As I expected, he dodged it easily. The coin sailed into the spray of rainbow-colored water. I hoped my prayer would be accepted in silence. I thought with all my heart, "Oh, goddess, accept my offering."
You tricked all of us,
I yelled at Luke.
Even Dionysus! At Camp Half-Blood!
Behind Luke, the fountain began to shimmer. But I needed everyone's attention on me, so I uncapped Riptide. Luke just sneered.
This is no time for heroics, Percy. Drop your puny little sword, or I'll have you killed sooner rather than later.
Who poisoned Thalia's tree, Luke?
I did, of course, he snarled. I already told you that. I used Elder Python venom straight from the depths of Tartarus.
Chiron had nothing to do with it?
Ha! Oh, you know he would never do that. The old fool wouldn't have the guts.
You call it guts? Betraying your friends? Endangering the whole camp?
Luke raised his sword.
You don't understand the half of it. I was going to let you take the fleece once I was done with it.
That made me hesitate. Why would he let me take the fleece? He must have been lying. But I couldn't afford to lose his attention.
You were going to heal Kronos, I said.
Yes, the fleece's magic would have sped his mending process by tenfold. But you haven't stopped us, Percy. You've only slowed us down a little.
And so you poisoned the tree, you betrayed Thalia, you set us up, all to help Kronos destroy the gods?
Luke gritted his teeth.
You know that. Why do you keep asking me?
Because I want everybody in the audience to hear you.
What audience?
Then his eyes narrowed. He looked behind him, and his goons did the same. They gasped and stumbled back. Above the pool, shimmering in the rainbow mist, was an iris message vision of Dionysus, Tantalus, and the whole camp in the dining pavilion. They sat in stunned silence, watching us.
Well, said Dionysus dryly, some unplanned dinner entertainment.
Mr. D, you heard him, I said. You all heard Luke. The poisoning of the tree wasn't Chiron's fault. Mr. D sighed.
I suppose not.
The iris message could be a trick, Tantalus suggested, but his attention was mostly on his cheeseburger, which he was trying to corner with both hands.
I fear not, Mr. D said,
looking with distaste at Tantalus.
It appears I shall have to reinstate Chiron as activities director. I suppose I do miss the old horse's pinochle games.
Tantalus grabbed the cheeseburger. It didn't bolt away from him. He lifted it from the plate and stared at it in amazement, as if it were the largest diamond in the world.
I got it, he cackled.
We are no longer in need of your services, Tantalus,
Mr. D announced. Tantalus looked stunned.
What? But...
You may return to the underworld. You are dismissed.
No. But... No!
As he dissolved into mist, his fingers clutched at the cheeseburger, trying to bring it to his mouth. But it was too late. He disappeared, and the cheeseburger fell back onto its plate. The campers exploded into cheering. Luke bellowed with rage. He slashed his sword through the fountain, and the iris message dissolved, but the deed was done. I was feeling pretty good about myself until Luke turned and gave me a murderous look.
Kronos was right, Percy. You're an unreliable weapon. You need to be replaced.
I wasn't sure what he meant, but I didn't have time to think about it. One of his men blew a brass whistle, and the deck doors flew open. A dozen more warriors poured out, making a circle around us, the brass tips of their spears bristling. Luke smiled at me.
You'll never leave this boat alive.
Chapter 18. The Party Ponies Invade. One-on-one, I challenged Luke. What are you afraid of? Luke curled his lip. The soldiers who were about to kill us hesitated, waiting for his order. Before he could say anything, Agrius, the bear man, burst onto the deck leading a flying horse. It was the first pure black Pegasus I'd ever seen, with wings like a giant raven. The Pegasus mare bucked and whinnied. I could understand her thoughts. She was calling Agrius and Luke some name so bad Chiron would have washed her muzzle out with saddle soap.
Sir,
Agrius called, dodging a Pegasus hoof.
Your steed is ready.
Luke kept his eyes on me.
I told you last summer, Percy, he said. You can't bait me into a fight.
And you keep avoiding one, I noticed. Scared your warriors will see you get whipped? Luke glanced at his men, and he saw I trapped him. If he backed down now, he would look weak. If he fought me, he'd lose valuable time chasing after Clarice. For my part, the best I could hope for was to distract him, giving my friends a chance to escape. If anybody could think of a plan to get them out of there, Annabeth could. On the downside, I knew how good Luke was at sword fighting.
I'll kill you quickly, he decided, and raised his weapon.
Backbiter was a foot longer than my own sword. Its blade glinted with an evil gray and gold light where the human steel had been melded with celestial bronze. I could almost feel the blade fighting against itself, like two opposing magnets bound together. I didn't know how the blade had been made, but I sensed a tragedy. Someone had died in the process. Luke whistled to one of his men, who threw him a round leather and bronze shield. He grinned at me wickedly.
"Luke," Annabeth said, "at least give him a shield."
"Sorry, Annabeth," he said. "You bring your own equipment to this party."
The shield was a problem. Fighting two-handed with just a sword gives you more power, but fighting one-handed with a shield gives you better defense and versatility. There are more moves, more options, more ways to kill. I thought back to Chiron, who told me to stay at camp no matter what and learn to fight. Now I was going to pay for not listening to him. Luke lunged and almost killed me on the first try. His sword went under my arm, slashing through my shirt and grazing my ribs. I jumped back, then counterattacked with Riptide, but Luke slammed my blade away with his shield.
"My Percy," Luke chided, "you're out of practice."
He came at me again with a swipe to the head. I parried, returned with a thrust. He sidestepped easily. The cut on my ribs stung. My heart was racing. When Luke lunged again, I jumped backward into the swimming pool and felt a surge of strength. I spun underwater, creating a funnel cloud, and blasted out of the deep end straight at Luke's face. The force of the water knocked him down, spluttering and blinded. But before I could strike, he rolled aside and was on his feet again. I attacked and sliced off the edge of his shield, but that didn't even faze him. He dropped to a crouch and jabbed at my legs. Suddenly, my thigh was on fire, with a pain so intense I collapsed. My jeans were ripped above the knee. I was hurt. I didn't know how badly. Luke hacked downward and I rolled behind a deck chair. I tried to stand, but my leg wouldn't take the weight.
"Percy!" Grover bleated.
I rolled again as Luke's sword slashed the deck chair in half, metal pipes and all. I clawed toward the swimming pool, trying hard not to black out. I'd never make it. Luke knew it, too. He advanced slowly, smiling. The edge of his sword was tinged with red.
"One thing I want you to watch before you die, Percy."
He looked at the bear man Aureus, who was still holding Annabeth and Grover by the necks.
"You can eat your dinner now, Aureus. Bon appetit."
The bear man lifted my friends and bared his teeth. That's when all Hades broke loose. Whish! A red feathered arrow sprouted from Aureus's mouth. With a surprised look on his hairy face, he crumpled to the deck.
"Brother!"
Agrius wailed. He let the Pegasus's reins go slack just long enough for the black steed to kick him in the head and fly away free over Miami Bay. For a split second, Luke's guards were too stunned to do anything except watch the bear twins' bodies dissolve into smoke. Then there was a wild chorus of war cries and hooves thundering against metal. A dozen centaurs charged out of the main stairwell.
"Ponies!"
Tyson cried with delight. My mind had trouble processing everything I saw. Chiron was among the crowd, but his relatives were almost nothing like him. There were centaurs with black Arabian stallion bodies, others with gold palomino coats, others with orange and white spots like paint horses. Some wore brightly colored t-shirts with Dayglow letters that said, "Party Ponies, South Florida Chapter." Some were armed with bows, some with baseball bats, some with paintball guns. One had his face painted like a Comanche warrior and was waving a large orange styrofoam hand, making a big number one. Another was bare-chested and painted entirely green. A third had googly-eye glasses with the eyeballs bouncing around on slinky coils and one of those baseball caps with soda can and straw attachments on either side. They exploded onto the deck with such ferocity and color that for a moment even Luke was stunned. I couldn't tell whether they had come to celebrate or attack. Apparently both. As Luke was raising his sword to rally his troops, a centaur shot a custom-made arrow with a leather boxing glove